Bob Moran. Yes, it's time to bomb Iran. Why? Because it's an election year. Of course, everybody knows that. If it's an election year, we've got to talk about bombing Iran, don't we? Hey, good evening, good afternoon, wherever we are, truth seekers. It is I, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, your friendly citizen investigative journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all around swell fellow, says me, broadcasting once again the penultimate edition for us this week of the Mike Malloy Show. Penultimate, by the way, means second to last, in case you were wondering. For Mike, he's out on vacation, enjoying a much-needed vacation. He'll be back with you Monday, so your long national nightmare will soon be over. At least on these, your public airwaves, we are broadcasting from KTalk AM 1150. In beautiful downtown Burbank, and it's a lovely, lovely day out here in Los Angeles. As I was going to say, the sun is setting, but it's not this time of year. We're almost at the longest day of the year, right? Yeah. But on the East Coast, it must be dark by now. What do I know? Anyway, glad you could join us tonight. Another big show. We will, yes, of course, an election year, so we've got to talk about bombing Iran. Why? Because Bill Kristol and Liz Cheney want to do it, so we all have to talk about it. God, the media is stupid. Our phone number tonight is 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Try to take as many of your phone calls as I can. We have several guests coming up on the show soon enough. Justin Elliott from ProPublica. We're going to talk about, you know, because this money thing is getting insane. We knew it was insane. We knew it would be insane as of January 2010 when the Supreme Court found, as they did in the Citizens United case. But now it's getting, well, you know, I can't even say worse than anybody imagined, because many of us did imagine this. Many of us wrote about it that afternoon when the stupid ruling came out from the Supreme Court. Now you've got Sheldon Adelson, whoever this jerk is, saying that his pro-Romney donations will be, quote, limitless. And he's worth $34 billion. So when he says limitless, I think he means limitless. We've also got a chat room open right now at the Brad Blog. Please stop on by. And, it's much more fun when you listen along with the chat room. Go to bradblog.com, the very top item there, and click through where it says click here to jump into our live chat room during the show. We would love to see you there. Am I there? Yeah, okay, good. I'm there. Oh, For Earth is there. Jeannie Dean is back, our old favorites. Cambridge Knitter, oh, she's early tonight. Dez and Margo, of course, are in there helping us moderate. And you can tweet me throughout the night, and I mean that in the nicest way, at The Brad Blog. That's The Brad Blog on the Twitters. Okay, well, let me jump right in. Oh, wait, I didn't give you. Okay, so let's see. Justin Elliott from ProPublica. All of my guests tonight are about money in politics. Justin Elliott is working over at ProPublica on their effort to get the TV stations to put their public records online. We're talking about the broadcast television stations, their public records, which are open to the public, to put them online, because right now, if you want to find out who is spending what on your airwaves for these political ads, you've actually got to go down to the TV station and say, can I please see the public files? And they must show them to you, by the way, because broadcast television, broadcast radio are supposed to be serving in the public interest. They have their licenses, thanks to the FCC, thanks to we the people who let them use our airwaves, our public airwaves. And so in exchange, they serve the public interest. Among that public interest is to show us who is buying these ads, these political ads, how much they're paying on their stations. Well, the FCC has passed a new rule that would take effect in July that will require these television stations to take their already public records and, you know, do something as simple as scan them and put them online. Not even make them searchable, just scan them and put them online. And not even all the television stations, just the top 50 or those in the top 50 television markets. In other words, the ones who can afford to do it. But the Republicans don't want them to. And so in Congress right now, the Republicans are trying to pass an amendment that will essentially make it such that the FCC cannot enforce this new rule. Now, why would the Republicans not want the television stations who are serving in the public interest to put the public files on the online so the public could see them? We will talk to Justin Elliott about that. We'll also talk to reporter, journalist, Sue, and filmmaker Sue Wilson about whether it was money that made the difference up in Wisconsin for Scott Walker, and as well her efforts to encourage folks to go to radio stations and TV stations to inspect those public files, which the Republicans are trying to keep the stations from having to show to the public. Got that. Also, John Wellington Ennis, another filmmaker. We'll talk about his new film, Pay to Play, about this insane world, this insane post-Citizens United world. You know, I know that people look at this landscape and they think, why bother? Why? This is absolutely insane. The corporations have taken over. I remember years ago, I used to come on the air and I would talk about the corporatocracy. And people would say, what? What's a corporatocracy? You know, and they didn't understand that it was the corporations who we had to look out for. No, it's not big government. It's the corporations. The corporations are buying the government. If you get the corporations out of the government, out of our elections, out of our campaigns, then we, the people, can take over the government again, and it can start making sense. And we can decide how big is too big for our government. Is it too big for the government to go in and tell women what medical procedures they may or may not have? Yes, I believe it is. So in that respect, yes, I'm against big government. Yes, I am conservative. Is the government too big when it tells you who you may or may not marry? Yes, I believe it is. So in that respect, I'm against big government, and I am the conservative one here. Anybody got a problem with that? You can call me at 877-520-1150. All right. I will get back to that in a moment. Did I get all the guests for tonight? Yeah. Okay. So they're coming up in a little bit. For now, it's just you and me, and I'm glad we're together. Or I should say you and me and Bill Kristol and Liz Cheney, because they want to bomb Iran again.
Iran's development of a nuclear weapon, I believe, is unacceptable. We do want to make sure that by the end of this year, we've actually seen a serious process move forward.
President Obama has spent 4 years talking, and Iran has spent 4 years building a secret nuclear site, nuclear fuel near weapons level, long-range missiles. Obama is still talking, and Iran has enough fuel for 5 nuclear bombs. Talking isn't working. It's time to act before it's too late.
Yes. Oh, there's a bomb at the end. Talking isn't working. It's time to start acting. We must bomb Iran. That message brought to you from the Emergency Committee for Israel, who released that new ad suggesting that the U.S. should bomb Iran immediately. Of course, the Emergency Committee for Israel is nothing more than pretty much just Bill Kristol and Liz Cheney. That's what they do. That's what these idiots do. Yes, we should bomb Iran. And by the way, they had the good common sense to put out that message in the same week that the 2,000th American has died in the Afghanistan war. The U.S. military reached an unfortunate milestone in Afghanistan on Wednesday. 2,000 Americans have died in Operation Enduring Freedom. Since it began, the Star Tribune in 2001, the Star Tribune reports that Marine Corporal Taylor J. Bone of Andover, Minnesota, was killed in Helmand Province, Afghanistan, Bowne had married his wife just 3 months prior to his deployment. And, of course, President Obama has signed an agreement pledging to pull military forces out of the country in 2014. Well, sort of, at least by 2024. So now we've lost 2,000 in Afghanistan. Actually, iCasualties.org has the number at 2,009 U.S. troops lost since 2001. More and more pretty much each and every year. Add that, of course, to the 4,486 U.S. troops lost in Iraq. That's, let's see, about about 6,500 U.S. troops have died. Feel safer now? J Street President Jeremy Ben-Ami responded to this horrible Bill Kristol ad by saying, "The people who pushed for war with Iraq are now bent on starting a war with Iran. The security of the United States and of Israel is too important to stand idly by while some of Mitt Romney's biggest supporters press for another war. Preventing Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon is a key U.S. and Israeli national security interest. That's why Americans and Israelis, including prominent national security experts in both countries, support the crippling sanctions and diplomacy that have been the heart of President Obama's policy." Yes, even the Israelis are against, at least the sane ones in Israel, are against bombing Iran. But that's not enough for Liz Cheney. That's not enough for Liz, always wrong Cheney. Bill, always wrong Kristol, who want to send your men and women to die. Brad on the Malloy Show. Stay tuned. Well, I'll cheer you up in a bit.
This town had never before traveled abroad. Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
Yeah, that's for you. That's for you, Bill Kristol. That's for you, Liz Cheney, and the Emergency Committee for Israel. Man, you guys are pathetic. Man, are you guys pathetic. And by the way, thanks to J Street President Jeremy Ben-Ami for pushing back against this new 30-second ad calling for war. I can't believe it's taken them so long. Why, you know, why aren't they talking every day about bombing Iran? It's an election year, don't you? Isn't that what we have to do now every year, year after year, no matter how many times, no matter how long these jerks have been wrong about everything else? Bill Kristol and Liz Cheney. We'll play some Green News Report later on in the show. On today's Green News Report, we've got a piece where Liz Cheney is talking about just a couple of months ago how gas prices were going to be about $8 this summer, thanks to Obama. But you would only hear that, you would only know that if you listened to the right television stations. Of course, she was on Fox News at the time. And, of course, the price of gas has been plummeting ever since. So how many times does this woman have to be wrong before she's no longer allowed on the airwaves? How many times does Bill Kristol have to be wrong before he's no longer allowed on the airwaves? Oh, yeah, that's right. They're only allowed on Fox News as it is. Actually, that's not true. I think ABC puts both of them on all the time. Go figure. The Emergency Committee for Israel's reflexive hawkishness stems from it. This is from, I think, Progress Security. Stems from its hard-right neocon disposition. The organization was even born in the same Washington office as the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq, a short-lived right-wing pressure group that pushed for an Iraq invasion. And if that invasion, and if that doesn't give you confidence, ECI, whose board members and directors have a history of exhorting acts of violence, ignores U.S., UN, and Israeli intelligence findings in their efforts for yet another U.S. war in the Middle East. This time with Iran. In Israel, meanwhile, a growing consensus has emerged among former top security officials that a military strike on Iran's nuclear facilities would be counterproductive to Israeli interests. And a report last month suggests that the consensus opposing an Israeli attack on Iran extends all the way to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's defense chiefs. A recent report from an influential Washington security think tank said attacking Iran could backfire. Oh, do you think? What could possibly go wrong? Speaking of what could possibly go wrong, there's Sheldon Adelson. Forbes confirms billionaire Sheldon Adelson, along with his wife Miriam, have donated $10 million to the leading super PAC supporting presumptive Republican nominee Mitt Romney, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. A well-placed source in the Adelson camp has direct knowledge of the casino billionaire's thinking and says that further donations will be, quote, limitless. Adelson is worth actually $24.9 billion. I think I said 34, but $24.9 billion. And told Forbes in a recent rare interview about his political giving that he had been willing to donate as much as $100 million to his initial presidential preference, Newt Gingrich. And that limitless description telegraphs potential nine-digit support of Mitt Romney. How's that Citizens United decision working out for you? How's your democracy working out for you? How's your Constitution working out for you? How's we the people going out there, right-wingers? Y'all happy about this? The $10 million donation he just made to Romney is equivalent to $40 for an American family with a net worth of $100,000. You got that? This is nothing to him. That's your country. That's your democracy. What are you going to do about it? We'll talk about it straight ahead. Brad on Molloy. Yeah, change your evil ways. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Bill Kristol. Getting it out of my system. Getting out of my system early. And then we, you know, then we can relax for the last couple of hours, right? Coming up in a few minutes, Justin Elliott of ProPublica. Also, you can call us if you like, 877-520-1150. I'll try to hit a phone call or two in a moment, 877-520-1150, talking about Sheldon Adelson and the quote-unquote limitless money he may give to Mitt Romney this year. Now that he's allowed to, now that Citizens United has opened the door up to unlimited money in politics. The man is worth $24.9 billion. Romney is positioned to reap, this is from Forbes, Romney is positioned to reap Adelson's largesse thanks to Citizens United. There are no curbs on how much Adelson could give the pro-Romney super PAC, Restoring Our Future. Given that he's one of the 15 richest people in the world, the Sands chairman could personally bankroll the equivalent of an entire presidential campaign, say, $1 billion or so, and not even notice. The $10 million donation he just made to Romney is equivalent to $40 for an American family with a net worth of $100,000. Okay, so you've got a net worth of $100,000 out there. You ever give $40 to a candidate? Think nothing of it. That's just like Sheldon Adelson giving $10 million. Just like you given 40. And there's no difference. Because everybody knows that money is free speech. Silly you. Adelson, ironically, has made more money during the Obama administration than just about any other American. Of course he has. Based on Forbes tabulations. He had previously told me, that's Steve Bertoni who has this exclusive. He had previously told me that just because he made money under Obama, it doesn't mean he thinks the president is doing the right thing. Adelson says, quote, what scares me is the continuation of the socialist style economy we've been experiencing for almost 4 years. That scares me because the redistribution of wealth is the path to more socialism and to more of the government controlling people's lives. Just, you know, what's socialism? What the hell are you talking about? Government spending is down. Government spending is lower now than it has been since, what, the last five presidents, six presidents. What's socialism? How stupid are you people? Why is it that the stupid people are the billionaires? 877-520-1150, if you've got an answer to that question. God, I believe that people, this is back to Sheldon, I believe that people will come to their senses and not extend the current administration's quest to socialize this country. It won't be a socialized democracy because it won't be a democracy. God, he's an idiot. But it is a democracy if you can give $10 million a pop to any damn candidate you want. Just like $40 to you and me. Well, to those of you who have $100,000 net worth. Not me. Meanwhile, Li Fang notes correctly from Republic Report. He tweeted, I saw him this afternoon, that, quote, the media is rightfully intrigued by Adelson's $36 million in donations so far this year. Why doesn't anyone care about insurers spending $107 million in 2010 on ads? Good point, Lee. We care. That's why we're going to be talking to Justin Elliott about almost exactly that in a few minutes, and then Sue Wilson after that, and then John Wellington Ennis after that, all about money in politics. But let me grab a few very quick calls here while I can. Robert in Long Island, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
Well, you know, a comment about, see, there's a reason why I don't get involved in politics like I used to, because what kind of language can we use on your show, sir?
What's your question, Robert?
Well, my thing is this. I don't know. What sort of language can we use? Is satellite radio?
No. You have, keep your, we've got our finger on the dump button. You cannot use, keep it clean, sir.
All right, let me just put it this way.
Okay.
You see, the people on my side, you know, it's amazing. Their naivety, it's amazing how weak they are. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like they figure if it makes sense, if it's intelligent, everybody's going to see it.
People on my side, what side are you talking about?
Oh, I'm talking about the liberal, left-wing, the Democrat. I dropped out because I realized a long time ago, I said, you're the people that are going to fight beside me? Let me put it to you this way. I'm going to tell you something I read today which blows my mind. The Republicans, as we know, they're ruthless. They'll do what they want, when they want, how they want. And they'll step on you, period. Now, my point is they're raising billions, probably by the time the election comes with the super PAC, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not only can Democrats and Obama not keep up, there are Democrats who will not give to super PACs because they don't think they should exist.
Mm-hmm.
They're sitting on principle.
Mm-hmm.
They're willing to let this election go by. They're willing to let this happen because they're sitting on principle. How much more naive, how farther in the liberal, how far much further in the ivory tower do you have to sit instead of saying, they play dirty, we play dirty. Let's fight them at their own game.
No, well, listen, all right, Robert. Robert, I hear you. The fact of the matter is, apparently giving the super PACs is no longer playing dirty. I understand what they are thinking, but they, like the Democrats, like the Democratic Party, who is all of a sudden yesterday, I talked about a story that the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee is saying, yes, Democrats, please, please now give to the super PACs, give to the third parties. We really need you to do it. So you know what? They want to jump in. Now, they're jumping in 2 years too late. And all of those Democrats who didn't want to give money to super PACs, why the hell weren't they giving money to organizations who are trying to do something about Citizens United? And why weren't the Democrats doing something about Citizens United every damn day if they had to, using their bully pulpit, standing out on the stairs of the Capitol every damn day if they had to, and making statements and organizing and pushing forward an amendment and, moving to impeach Clarence Thomas, by the way, the scofflaw sitting on the Supreme Court. Why weren't they doing that? So I think, Robert, I think we're in agreement here. You know what? But standing on the sidelines, as you suggest, and by the way, I don't believe you because you called in, so you're not on the sidelines. Standing on the sidelines doesn't change anything. That doesn't mean you need to go out and support Democrats. I'm not telling you to do anything other than to not stand on the sidelines, to get involved, to make noise, to use your public airwaves as you did in this case, but raise holy hell. Fix the system. I'm so tired of people saying, oh, it's so terrible. There's nothing we can do. Anyway, let's go to Gary in Minneapolis. Gary, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you for talking about the voting and stuff, because I think part of the problem we have on the left is that people want to do it one way and they don't want to unite like the right is. And I think it's like when the Vietnam War protests came about, it was unions and it was anti-war people, and a lot of different groups got together and changed things. So I think we're going to have to come together and find a common thread so we don't go off and disenfranchise ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And what should that common thread be, Gary?
Well, like you were talking about, like when Mark Taylor Canfield called up and said, you know, the occupiers aren't really interested in the politics or election stuff. I think that you can have that opinion, but you also should, you know, unless you're coming up with something that can overwhelm that, which I would be in favor of, but I haven't heard anything so far. You should try to find a way that you can run. He suggested he might run, which I think would be great. I'd love to vote for an Occupy person.
Yeah, well, we had one running out here in California, and the occupiers didn't really want to rally around him, and I just don't understand that. I've talked about that the last couple of nights, and caught some hell from some people who think I'm painting with too broad a brush. So I don't want to say that all the occupiers don't, but no, it seems to me that the occupiers ought to be putting forward their own candidates in every city in this country. Put forward their own candidates. If they don't like the Republicans or the Democrats, fine. Put up your own people. Put them up as Democrats. Put them up as Republicans. Put them up as an Occupy party. I don't care. Take action. Gary, I got to run. I appreciate your call, sir. All right, let me get to very quickly, and then we're going to go to a break. Arnold Arnold in North Carolina. Hey, Arnold, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Oh, it's Arnold again. Oh, good. Hey, very quickly, brother, I got to get to a break here. Give me your best shot.
Allison was crazy what he said, because Barack Obama's the last day he's a socialist. I wish he was, had any kind of socialism in his system, you know. But the thing of it is, you know, we are lost because we've been looped. Being looped around, and they are, we stood there and watched all this thing go by happening, and the people just did absolutely nothing.
Well, that's,
and it's going to be a change made, but I don't know whether it's going to be a social change or maybe mob scene out in the streets. It's just going to have to come down to that.
It's going to happen, Arnold. We'll figure it out. I got today and tomorrow left on this show. We'll save the world by the end of the week. Don't worry, Arnold. I got to jump to a break. I appreciate your thought. Quite a socialist, that Obama. He has presided over the largest corporate profits in the history of this nation, in the history of mankind. Man, that's the kind of socialism that you'd think these capitalists would love. How much more do you people want? All right, coming back with Justin Elliott. Here's something you can do to take action. Stay tuned. Brad on the Mike Malloy Show. That's it. Brad Friedman here on the Mike Malloy Show, Brad of bradblog.com. having trouble getting in touch with Justin Elliott. We will keep trying, and we'll sort of push all our guests back if we have to. He's from ProPublica.org. One we look forward to. If we get him, we'll jump right in with him. But he has been writing, and ProPublica has been running a campaign over there to try to free up the files at your TV stations. We talked a little bit last night about the California Disclose Act that needs a single Republican to sign on up here in Sacramento. And all it will do is require that the top three funders of any political TV ad say so at the end of the ad. The top three funders for this ad are ExxonMobil, the Chamber of Commerce, and God knows who else. And put their logos up there. Not a single Republican will sign on to that up in Sacramento, out here in California. You know, when Citizens United was passed, they talked about those in favor, and the majority talked about that, you know, transparency is good. And the free market, well, you know, people can't just give money and not be held accountable for it. When people see all this money going out, they'll hold those people accountable if they don't agree with them. Well, no, they won't, because they were also allowed to hide that money in super PACs, hide that money in television ads. Now, there's a way to find out who is funding all of those television ads. You can walk down or drive down to your television station and say, I would like to see your public files. Please show me your political public files. They have to show them to you because they are given a license by we the people, we socialists, who give them the airwaves, our public airwaves to use. And in exchange for that, they have to tell us how they're using them, who is buying these ads on their stations. Now, the FCC has passed a new rule that will go into effect, or should go into effect, in July, that will require the public stations in the top 50 markets to put the public files online, to scan them and put them online. So they won't even be searchable. It won't even be a database. That's not even being required of them. All they've got to do is scan the public files, put them online, so we can go and look at them. And even that, they are fighting, because they want to use your public airwaves. That's right. The television stations, the corporations who own the TV stations and the radio stations, you know, those corporate socialists who are using our public airwaves to lie to you, to tell you that it's time to bomb Iran, or whatever crap Liz Cheney and Bill Kristol want to lie to you about. Right. Those people have public files, those corporations. They're not people. Sorry, Mitt. They're not people. They're corporations. But they have public files, and they're fighting putting them online so that we, the people, can see them, even though they're already public. So right now, you got to go down and look at the files. Now, the Republicans in the House, specifically, there was a hearing in March, as Justin Elliott writes. Rep. Joanne Emerson, Republican from Missouri, chair of the Financial Services and General Government Subcommittee of the House Appropriations Committee, grilled FCC Chairman Julius Genachowski about the then proposal that would take away the funding from the FCC that would be used to enforce this requirement for these files to be posted online so we the people could see it. Yes, all the Republicans on this committee voted to block the funding for this little rule, to keep it from going into effect. So Emerson said to Congressman Emerson said to Genachowski, why do you care about this? You have plenty of other things that are far more important to deal with, since we are already have a Federal Election Commission who has jurisdiction over campaign finance. Why in the world is this a big priority? Can't you leave the TV stations alone? Leave the giant corporations alone. They fund us. So they had a hearing this past Wednesday, or last Wednesday, Congressman Hal Rogers, Republican of Kentucky, the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, joined the other Republicans in arguing that the new rule would be overly burdensome for stations. You know, all that scanning of several documents, and then they'll have to upload it. It's exhausting. What does it matter? Who cares if Sheldon Adelson gives $1 billion all by himself to Mitt Romney? Who cares? Why do we need to know that? It's burdensome. God, this is what this country has become. And we've watched it. We've let it happen. Yes, we've let it happen. The occupiers, they tried to do something about it, and they got a face full of pepper spray as thanks. And the jerks on the right, who pretend to be against big government, were cheering the big government when they were beating the crap out of the peaceful occupiers. Jackasses like Andrew Breitbart were cheering the police. We're cheering the big government. It's a crazy world we live in, ain't it? All right, when we come back, we're going to speak with Sue Wilson, extending what we had hoped to, unless we hear from Justin Elliott, then we'll move things around. But we wanted to talk to Sue about a similar issue that we were going to talk to Justin about the public files, because it doesn't just refer to TV. It also refers to radio. And your local radio station would love to see you. And they would love to show you their public files, their public political files. Just ask the folks up there in Wisconsin who were looking at those public political files during the recall effort up there. And imagine what they found out. Well, you won't have to imagine anymore. We're going to go to Sue Wilson to talk about exactly that when we come back from this break. You're listening to Brad Friedman, in for Mike Malloy. Big show ahead. Stay with us. Welcome back, Truth Seekers. This is your Mike Malloy Show. No, I am not Mike Malloy. I'm Brad Friedman, your humble investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com. Sitting in for Mike for a couple more nights here. He'll be back on Monday, so you can look forward to that. Until then, you got me, and I got you. You can also have all of us in the chat room at bradblog.com. Go to the top item there. Click on through to the chat room. It's a very lively discussion as ever. I haven't even mentioned, by the way, voting machines tonight. And here we got 4Earth sitting there in the chat room saying, quote, "I have been wishing that Anonymous would hack all the voting machines with all the votes going to all the Democrats to illustrate how hackable the machines are. It would only take one election, and every Republican would be screaming for paper and hand-counted paper ballots. Don't count on it, 4Earth. Just ask Alvin Green out there in South Carolina. Remember that? Nobody can explain that Democratic election, and everybody seems to be fine with it. Was it hacked by Anonymous or anybody else? Who knows? Who knows how a guy who had no... who was unemployed, who did no campaigning, who had no campaign, who had no money, how he suddenly won the nomination for U.S. Senate across the entire state of South Carolina. Oh, the entire state of South Carolina, by the way, uses 100% unverifiable touchscreens, but that's just a coincidence. Of course, afterwards, the Democrats swang into action to make sure that that would change. Oh, wait, no, they didn't. They're still voting on that same crap, and that's what they'll be voting on this November. Anyway, our phone number's here, 877-520-1150. Have I cheered you up yet? You can go to the chat room, I said that, at bradblog.com, and you can tweet me at TheBradBlog. That's my Twitter name, The Brad Blog. Okay, where are we here? Is that it? Can we go to? I was finishing up, actually. I don't know what happened to Justin Elliott there from ProPublica, but I do want to push you towards ProPublica.org's efforts. Because while the Republicans are trying to block the requirement to put television stations' public records, the records that are already public files, for political ads and who bought all of those propaganda ads on their stations and everything. The Republicans are trying to block that, block the requirement by the FCC to put those files online, to scan them and put them online. Seems pretty simple since they're already public anyway. Save me and you the trouble of walking down to the station. Anyway, ProPublica has an effort to help people go down to the stations and get those things scanned and put online anyway. So check out ProPublica.org. And I suspect we'll be talking even a little bit more about that in this segment coming up shortly with Sue Wilson. We'll also be joined by John Wellington Ennis in a little bit. And, oh, by the way, tomorrow night, former Bush scientist, science administrator Rick Piltz will join us. I should say Bush science administrator turned whistleblower, who I first interviewed back in 2005 when he blew the whistle on the fact that the Bush administration was removing references to global warming from their quote-unquote scientific documents. I haven't talked to Rick Piltz since 2005. So I want to look for. I'm looking forward to talking to him, seeing how it's going, because I know back in 2005 he was calling for other whistleblowers to step forward and resign and blow the whistle on what was going on inside the Bush administration. Want to see how that worked out? Did it? Huh, we'll find out. All right, Sue Wilson. That's tomorrow night on your Mike Malloy Show. Sue Wilson is a media activist, the director of Broadcast Blues, and a 22-year veteran of broadcast journalism. Her numerous awards include an Emmy, an AP, an RTND. Boy, look at all these awards. She's the editor of the media criticism blog SueWilsonReports.com and, more recently, the founder of MediaActionCenter.net. Of course, most importantly, she's a frequent contributor to BradBlog.com. I'm sure that's her highest honor. Hey, Sue, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, Brad, it's good to be with you.
Good to have you here. I appreciate it. And I don't know if you heard, we had hoped to talk to Justin Elliott about public files by TV stations. And I know that the Media Action Center has an effort to do exactly that when it comes to radio. But before we get to that effort, actually, I think it's part of the same effort. You had recently been up in Wisconsin prior to the recall election up there. You were talking to folks, showing them your film Broadcast Blues, and you got a bunch of folks fired up in Wisconsin to take action and to make a difference. Give me a quick idea of what those folks did and what they learned in the process.
Well, you know, Brad, it does go kind of back to the public files.
Mm-hmm.
When I was back in Wisconsin touring 8 different cities in that state with Broadcast Blues, I was talking with people about the same issue you and I talk about all the time, that we, the people, own the local radio and the local TV airwaves. They belong to us,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And I said the biggest, best way you can prove this to yourself is going down to your local station and walking in the door saying, I want to see the public files.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, I'll bring you there tomorrow. So we did this. The people who came with me were just convinced we were going to get arrested. And, of course, not get arrested. We got, you know, ushered back to this file cabinet. But it was very interesting because we learned by looking at these files that the Democrats in the state of Wisconsin, and remember, they had an earlier recall election. They had a recall election last year.
Right.
And we were able to look at the files and find that the Democrats were buying all kinds of time on these conservative talk radio stations. There's two big stations, one owned by Clear Channel, one owned by Journal Communication.
Mm-hmm.
And what we discovered was that the Republicans weren't buying much time at all. And why, might you ask?
Why, might I ask?
Well, the 5 conservative talk radio stations in Milwaukee were giving free time to the Republicans, but they were charging Democrats for their time, okay?
Yes.
Well, so that respond an idea.
Now, they weren't giving free ad time, right? The Democrats, they were actually buying ads on these radio stations. The Republicans weren't buying ads because you say the free time that they were getting was not from ads, but from the shows themselves?
Absolutely. That's exactly right. You know, they would have the candidates as guests. They would have supporters of candidates as guests. You had a candidate named Alberta Darling who came out, who won. She, mm-hmm. she shouldn't have won, but she squeaked by. And when she won, she completely credited talk radio with her victory. If not for conservative talk radio, I would never have won this election. And she was right.
So that's what one of the things that they saw. So what did these folks in Wisconsin start doing at that point?
Well, at that point, we started to talk about what could we do, and we came up with a scheme. Let's monitor during the Scott Walker recall election, which was only a 28-day election.
Right.
Let's just monitor the first couple weeks of the election and see how many minutes are these five local radio hosts giving to Scott Walker and the GOP and supporters of those candidates mm-hmm. versus how many minutes are they giving to the Democrats. And when we, and I literally had people with stopwatches listening to these five shows to find out how many minutes, we discovered that each of the two stations were giving about 80 minutes every single day to Scott Walker and about 2 minutes to Tom Barrett, the Democratic opponent. Now, to put that in monetary terms.
Now, that's 80 minutes of talking about him, supporting him, or actually having him or one of his supporters on the air?
That was either having Scott Walker on the air
uh-huh.
or supporters on the air, but we narrowed it much further than that, okay? Because you might have a supporter on the air, and you might be talking about how well the Brewers did last night, okay? We were actually looking for comments like, Scott Walker is a Jedi. Scott Walker is the greatest governor we've ever had. Tom Barrett is a racist, okay? We were looking statements that were clearly in support or clearly bashing the other side.
Right.
If you took that as a negative, it's the same mm-hmm. as positive for the Scott Walker side.
Okay.
So we clearly identified out of the 15 hours of conservative talk radio programming every day, about 160 minutes of those 15 hours were basically free ad for the GOP. And people don't think much about that when we think about minutes, but it adds up to if you're going to buy that time, and again, this goes back to public files. How did we come up with these numbers? We had to go back to the public files to figure out what they're charging for these ads.
Mm-hmm.
That's about $70,000 every single day that they were giving in free airtime to the GOP to promote those candidates.
Versus how much were they giving to the Democrats to promote their candidates?
Well, maybe 400, although even the 2 minutes...
Dollars? $400?
Yeah.
Okay.
And even that, the Tom Barrett, it was. I won't even go there. But yeah, so you know, talk about imbalance. Here's the really interesting part of this, though.
Mm-hmm.
There is an obscure FCC rule that I dusted off of the shelves.
Yep.
That says if you're going to have a supporter of one candidate on the air, you've got to have supporters of the other candidate on the air. There's a trick to it. The supporters of the candidate who wants to be on. Let me back up. So if a station wants to have supporters of Scott Walker on the air, they can do that. But if a supporter of Tom Barrett writes to the station within 7 days
right.
and says, I want to be on the air to support my candidate to get on these airways and talk
right.
about how good my guy is, they have to let you on the air. But, of course, after our team in Wisconsin wrote many letters to WISN and WTMJ,
mm-hmm.
They were either ignored or they got letters back going, no, we're not going to put you on the air.
So they did actually try to send letters to request that the other side be put on in response. So they don't have to reach out. They don't have to invite them. But if the other side says, hey, I would like to have such and such on, then they must do that under this doctrine. And this is, by the way, I think the Zappel doctrine you're talking about, part of the Communications Act of 1934, correct?
This is the Zappel Doctrine, it's based on Section 315 of the Communications Act, which is if you have a candidate on, you must have equal time for the other candidate. Zappel was an FCC rule that expanded that rule to say, and if you're going to have supporters of candidates on, you got to have supporters of the other candidates.
Okay, hold the thought. We're going to come back. We'll have just a few minutes with Sue Wilson. We'll get more on the Zappel Doctrine, more on what can be done, on what you can do, as they did in Wisconsin. Brad, in for Mike Malloy. Stay tuned. If it can be proved, as alleged by Sue Wilson and the Media Action Center, that these Milwaukee radio stations consistently only interviewed or promoted a single candidate without ever providing airtime to his opponent, it is not only possible but likely that the FCC would not apply the exception and would require equal time for the other candidates. The FCC rules on this matter may have a significant effect on the upcoming fall national and state elections, writes Stephen J.J. Weissman at Talkers.com. That's Talkers Magazine. It's an industry magazine, and they are anything, frankly, but lefty liberal pinkos. They noticed what Sue Wilson was up to. She wrote about it at bradblog.com again this week, and she is my guest here on The Mike Malloy Show. I'm Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Okay, Sue, so we were talking about the Zappel Doctrine, this obscure sort of doctrine that has not been enforced for quite a while by the FCC that requires these stations, like those up in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, that your people monitored to give equal time to both candidates if they request it, because, as you pointed out, they gave away for free some $70,000, is that per day, in ad time to Scott Walker for free?
Per day.
Every day. Versus $400 worth for the Democrats all over our public airwaves. All right, we've got just a few minutes left. What is being done? You've issued a complaint, I guess, with the FCC, and what can citizens do about this in their local at their local radio and TV stations?
Well, first of all, I want people to understand how really serious this is for the entire country. What we are doing is pitting the First Amendment rights of we the people against the First Amendment rights of the big media corporations. How many times do you hear these talkers go, well, we have First Amendment rights? Well, so do we the people, and our rights are being violated. So we've made this complaint to the FCC, but here's our challenge. The FCC isn't sure they want to enforce the rule. They would prefer just to bury their head in the sand, I'm sure, and not have to stand up for the public interest. So what I'm asking people to do is to go to MediaActionCenter.net, read the complaint. I think it's a beautiful piece of work. There is a petition that you can sign there. We need to get many signatures on this petition that says to the FCC, we the people of these United States support this rule. We want parity on our public airwaves. It's critically important that we get a groundswell of support that says to the FCC, remember who you work for, FCC. You work for us. And you stand up for us.
And as Talkers says, this could have a very serious effect come this fall. Now, you did very quickly in the minute or so we have left here, you've been encouraging people to go look at the public files at their local radio stations. Have you heard from people who have done that, and what have they found?
It is very interesting, and of course, we've been sponsoring public files inspections all over the country for several months now. What we find is that especially Clear Channel does not keep their public files up to date. They often will refuse people access. Their computers are so old that when you walk in to do a public files inspection, the computer won't turn on. They're purposely trying to keep information away from the public. But, you know, this whole idea of putting the information online, I love that idea. It makes it so accessible. At the same time, there is a beauty in getting two or three people and walking into a station and saying, we're here to see your files. There's a greater beauty in getting 10 people to go into that station to see the public files.
And now
25, like we did in Sacramento.
And now we know when they go and look at those files, they can copy those files, they can Xerox those files, and send them to ProPublica.org, and ProPublica.org will get them online, and maybe we, the people, can oversee our public airwaves. Sue, I got to run. I got a busy show tonight. I love what you're doing. Keep it up. Check Sue Wilson out at MediaActionCenter.net. Thanks, Sue.
Thanks, Brad.
All right. When we come back, John Wellington Ennis and some of your calls. Brad on Molloy. Every day in the week.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
No,
gonna
I won't
stand my ground.
I certainly won't. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike. Mike Molloy, we'll get to your phones in a little bit here. We're going to talk to John Wellington Ennis, filmmaker. One of my favorite documentarians, I must say. Very momentarily. Our phone number is 877-520-1150. We're getting John on the line. He's got a new film out, Pay to Play. Well, it's not out yet. He's working on it, but we got the first 10 minutes was unveiled at Netroots last weekend. We'll play a bit of that, and we'll talk to John in a moment. But first, a real quick call from Sanchez out here in Los Angeles. Hey, Sanchez, welcome to the Mike Molloy Show, sir.
Well, thank you, sir. I just wanted to back up what she was saying.
Sue Wilson, yes.
Yes, Sue Wilson was talking about visiting the studios.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically like another responsibility because they hold so much control because, in essence, they have the airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
And we visited one of the local radio stations there in town. Last time she came down, she did her presentation to the people at Occupy LA.
Mm-hmm.
And so separately, a few of us members of Occupy LA, along with Sue, and she had her camera. We visited this radio station. We went to the room where they had a computer that was probably so old it was probably a Commodore, and that's where the records. And again, backing up what Sue said, the records were only on paper, and they weren't current. I think they went up to 2004. So right there. That's something that she was able to take action on. So it is so important. I mean, I can't stress how important this is, particularly when they have so much time, when we have so little time that we do this thing. It's like it's so important to, like, visit a radio station,
mm-hmm.
and it is, believe me, trust me, Matt, it is so empowering.
What?
You walk out of there, and you know that, like, We've evened the playing field. At least we're keeping track of what they're doing.
I think that one of the issues is that the people generally don't understand, and the people, the citizens, the public, don't understand that the airwaves belong to us and that the radio stations are supposed to be serving, and the TV stations, the broadcast stations, are supposed to be serving in the public's interest. The airwaves don't belong to them. They don't belong to the big corporations. They belong to we, the people. So it's a really nice reminder of that when folks around the country go and visit those radio stations and be polite and be respectful, but ask to see the public files. And Sanchez, I'm glad you did that out here in L.A., and I hope people will continue to do it, whether it's here in L.A. or anywhere else across the country, because not only do the people not really understand that these are their airwaves, I am speaking to you on your airwaves. Your airwaves, not mine, not Clear Channels, not CBS, not to any of the, you know, Cumulus,
exactly.
Or ABC. It's the public's airwaves. So not only do the public not understand that, I think a lot of the radio stations forget that, and the corporations forget that. So this is a nice reminder, and we do find, as Sue Wilson pointed out, you know, when you look at those public files, you can see the amount of money that is being spent on those political ads, and you figure out things like why are the Democrats spending all this money on this station, and why are the right wingers not spending any money on that station? Oh, because the right wingers are getting free airtime. They don't need to buy ads on that station. They're getting free airtime that is worth, you know, $70,000. Versus the $400 a day that the Democrats were getting. At least that was the story up in Milwaukee in the middle of that election. Well, elections are now happening all across the country. This matters everywhere. So stay in touch with MediaActionCenter.net and ProPublica.org and radio stations like this and shows like this, Sanchez, to remind people exactly of that. Thank you, sir, for doing that and for all your good work. Keep it up, brother.
Okay, man. Thanks.
All right. Do we have John? All right, we've got John. Well, you know what? Let me do this. Where's my? Here we go. Before I go to John Wellington Ennis, the director of the upcoming documentary "Pay to Play: Democracy's High Stakes." And before that, this is a follow-up to his previous film in 2008, "Free for All: One Dude's Quest to Save Democracy," one of my favorite, I should say, one of my favorite election integrity films. There's a lot of good ones out there. This is a great one. You can get that one at freeforall.tv. And by way of full disclosure, yes, I am in Free for All, but it's good anyway. Pay to Play is still being put together in time for release, hopefully before this fall's election. A 10-minute preview, or perhaps the first 10 minutes of the film, I'm not sure, were released at Netroots over the weekend. You can see them at pay2play, that's pay2play.tv. And we've got just a minute or two from the film, from the beginning part of the film, before we go to John Ennis. Let me welcome John. Maybe he needs to set this up. Hang on a sec. Hey, John, where we go? There we go. Hey, John, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here.
All right, I haven't gotten to listen to your clip yet. Is there anything we need to know to set it up, or do we just let it roll for a moment?
I think you let it roll. I think it's pretty timely wherever I think it's jumping in.
All right, we will we'll play it, and we'll come back to you, John Wellington Ennis. This is from Pay to Play, Democracy's High Stakes.
If you think about it, it's like a racket. Our elections encourage stealing. I think of this as pay to play, because it's a second party's money being used. Ours. Politicians don't take money directly. The money goes into their re-election campaign. Maybe if campaigns didn't cost so much, elected leaders wouldn't become so beholden to their donors, and we could get the right people in office. The candidate with the most money wins over 90% of the time. That's not an election. That's an auction.
And the painful truth of the matter is that in America today, powerful people give campaign contributions to candidates for public office. They give them regularly as a business expense. We have a bought and sold political process.
We have a one person, one vote system, and they're trying to turn it into a $1, one vote. And that's plutocracy, not democracy.
There is a reason why we don't have single payer, Medicare for all, national health care in America. The reason is that people have paid a lot of money to make sure that didn't happen. These are people who are paying politicians to make decisions to underfund our schools. These are people who are paying money to create results that are absolutely damaging to society. And that's what pay to play is. It's an ugly, ugly reality.
Ugly, ugly reality indeed. That is a short clip from from Pay to Play, Democracy's High Stakes, by John Wellington Ennis. And I believe I heard the voices there of John Nichols of Nation Magazine and Van Jones as well. Identify him correctly. Okay, John, what moved you to make this film? And is it, in essence, I sort of called it a follow-up to Free for All, One Dude's Quest to Save Democracy. Is it, in a sense, the next chapter to that film, so to speak?
Yeah, well, it's a pretty mighty quest, I'm finding out, and I don't think it's one of those things you can fit into one film.
I see.
So, yeah, so while I was in Ohio looking at how they were counting the ballots, if they were counting the ballots, I started to meet some inspiring people who would run for office around that same time, 2006, people like Paul Hackett,
right.
The Iraq War veteran who returned from Fallujah to run for Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And I was struck by, you know, all the obstacles that, you know, prevented people from getting on the ballot in the first place. And so, you know, the idea of focusing on money and politics was definitely a driving force for me in the background while I was doing all this stuff for Free for All. And so, you know, what I think we've seen over the last couple of years has been, you know, that other arm of voter suppression rising, which is the big money in politics.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not enough that, you know, we have to fight against privatized elections and unviewable vote totals, but you know, the amount of money being spent and now being allowed to spend. You've spoken very well in this film on Citizens United. It really is a whole new world of misinformation that's affected the general populace now.
That's right. And I should say, for full disclosure, that you've interviewed me a few times for this film. I don't know if I make the cut, if I'll end up in the final version or not. But
yeah. Okay. I'm a character in it.
I'm a character in it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Uh-oh. Now I'm concerned.
the
film actually starts out, and some folks may remember this from the darkest days of the Bush era, the whole, what was it, Tom Noe, is that his name?
Yeah.
The Tom Noe scandal, Coingate, as they called it at the time, this guy who sort of bought his way into the Republican Party out there in Ohio, into a position of power where he was then able to, take the state pensions and invest them in rare coins that then somehow suddenly disappeared?
Yeah, you know, the Tom Noe Coingate scandal was such a fascinating parable to me, and that was one of the first things I gravitated towards in the whole thing in the backdrop of the 2004 election, is because this guy was a huge Bush supporter and ultimately went to jail on conviction of laundering money into the Bush campaign and bringing in a bunch of other people to take money from him and donate it into the Bush campaign so he could up his status. And so but it, attached to his, you know, very typical sort of money and politics profile were all these ridiculous details, like the things he spent his money on, and, you know, because he was such a political geek, you know, he bought, like, he had the a Christmas card from JFK worth a couple hundred dollars, and he had a personal letter from Nixon worth like $17. He had like, these obscure things. But the idea that, you know, the investments of the Ohio Bureau of Workers' Comps was extended into Beanie Babies and collectibles like LeBron James jerseys, who
right.
is, you know, pretty vilified now in Ohio, ironically, was part of the ludicrous, that it's like, this will jump out to people. You know, you can hear a lot about stuff about the other forms of industry that will make up that sort of political influence. But what I love so much about him, though, is that he really rose from delivering money, you know, making his money from delivering newspapers as a kid to get his coin collection going. And then from there, just kept giving money to people. It didn't take that much, but he bundled people in northeast Ohio to northwest Ohio to be able to have that kind of influence that, you know, normally you wouldn't get from Toledo. And so before you know it, he suddenly ingratiated himself to people like Karl Rove. And so he knows the vote totals that Karl said that he needed to get in different districts, which, you know.
And his wife, yeah, because his wife, as I recall, was also working on the election commission in, I can't remember the Ohio county, where I think she was like the chair of the election commission.
Lucas County.
Lucas County, that's right. And so I think it's all the same game here, whether it's a sort of in one sense, a small time con, a short con with a guy like Tom Noe, who was, you know, trying to ingratiate himself into the Republican Party in this case, paying money to get there and then getting huge returns from it, whether it's a guy like Tom Noe or whether it's a huge corporation doing the same thing, it pays to pay off these politicians. It pays for a Sheldon Adelson, as we were talking about earlier in the show, to put money into these campaigns, they get it back in spades.
Absolutely.
When their guys get elected, right?
And I think the main difference between Tom Noe and a lot of these other instances is that Tom Noe went to jail. And I think if he had been a corporation, a lot of those things really wouldn't have been prosecutable in that same sense.
Yeah, he was one of the rare guys who went to jail. John, can you stick around for one more quick segment here?
Absolutely.
Okay, we're talking with John Wellington Ennis, filmmaker of the upcoming documentary Pay to Play, Democracy's High Stakes, and you can see that entire 10-minute opening, and it's really cool. Trust me, I love John's films. He's smart and he's funny. And they're exactly what this country needs to see. Go check that out at pay2play.tv. Pay2play.tv. All right, when we come back, some more with a few more minutes with John Ennis and your calls, 877-520-1150. These are your public airwaves. Use them. This is the Mike Malloy Show.
We're going to run to all on that day. Will I run to the rock? Please hide me around. For so long, it's not true. Wanted a woman, never bargained for you. Lots of people talking, few of them know. Soul of a woman was created below.
Is Tony trying to send me a message with that? Dazed and confused. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Yes, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike, speaking with John Wellington Ennis, filmmaker of Free For All, One Dude's Quest to Save Democracy from 2008. Check that out at freeforall.tv. And the upcoming documentary, Pay to Play, Democracy's High Stakes. Oh, it's the world in the post-Citizens United era. And it should be really cool. I'm really looking forward to this one. John, we've got just a minute or two here. You have been making this film, I know, for a while, a couple of years now, because I've been interviewed a few times by you.
We're using all of it, I promise.
No, that's not why I'm asking, although you're smart to do that. But it seems like in the sort of this post-Citizens United era that this whole thing is a bit of a moving target, that I suspect you're not making the same film now that you thought you were making when you started. You can tell me if I'm right or wrong there, but I'm just curious, what have you learned in the process of making this film that you did not know or that you did not expect when you went into it?
Well, in a sense, I'm telling the same story, the same parable of business and politics and getting a huge return and the cost at the public expense.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been fortunate that there's been such huge revelations since, 2010 and particularly in 2011 to give names and faces to some of these great giants that have been affecting these things, that we look at things differently now, but there's so many people who don't know about the Koch brothers or
mm-hmm.
Alec, and don't necessarily understand how partisan and bitter the Supreme Court could actually be as guys. People like to think of it as some supreme beings, and
yep.
Surprisingly, some hacks get in.
So sort of the emergence of certainly of Alec, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and the power of the Koch brothers. That was not there back in 2008, when I think when you started thinking about this film. Those guys have emerged just over the past couple of years into the public.
Yes, and but it has helped me understand and be able to reinforce in my film the lesson of the different ways that people power has such an important lasting effect. And that's what I really try to illustrate in the film. And I do this in Not just in following the political discourse and protesters and activism around these issues, but also getting into storylines surrounding Monopoly and the suppressed history of how it came to be in our popular culture.
The game Monopoly. Right.
Yeah, it's endless, the dark implications in the game and the history of the game. And at the same time, the emergence of political street art is a way to speak out against the monopoly of corporate speech surrounding us. And so, as I said, you know, what I really was afforded besides revelations in this time was a lot more, you know, different people who were getting out their story in some way. So, in following people running for office firsthand in 2010, I was able to see what it really goes into it after Citizens United and, you know, the implications of what we now know as the Super PAC era.
Very cool. Check check this out at pay2play.tv, pay2play.tv. Can people support you there? Are you looking for donations?
Yeah,
I got 10 seconds here.
We're on a Kickstarter campaign right now. We actually have a an art benefit tomorrow night in downtown L.A. We'll be showing some art and from the film, and we're also going to be showing that massive Monopoly board that we unveiled at May Day that took over an entire intersection that shows our version of the pay-to-play system.
Go check out pay2play.tv to get details on that. John Wellington Ennis, thank you, brother.
Thank you, man.
More straight ahead on the Mike Malloy Show. Welcome back, Truth Seekers. It is I, Mike Malloy. No, wait a minute. It is I, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, and muckraker here on the final hour of the penultimate night of our week-long guest host stint for Mike Malloy. Mike and Kathy are out on vacation. They'll be back Monday. Your long national nightmare will be over. Until then, your long national nightmare continues with me here on the Mike Malloy Show. And with you, if you'd like to get in, 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150 is our phone number. You can stop by the chat room. It's still lively and hopping. And they use all the words we can't on the air. At bradblog.com, the chat room. And go over there, click through the first item. You'll find it. And where else? Oh, the Twitters. There we go. The Brad Blog. That's who I am on the Brad Blog. Okay? And let's see. Oh, one of my trolls jumps in on the Twitter to say the Brad Blog. So, Obama bought the 2008 election. After all, he outspent McCain $778 million to $383 million. The Breitbots are out tonight. Well, yes. I don't know if those numbers are correct. But if you're outraged about it, I'll join you. I think that's insane. What do you think? You happy now, Wild Bill? Okay, let's see. Yes, get the money out of politics. I don't care if it's Obama's money. Get the money the hell out of politics. Return politics to we the people. Do you right-wingers not get that? Which part of the U.S. Constitution do you people hate? We the people. Our self-governance. Not the corporation self-governance, not ExxonMobil self-governance, our self-governance, not Johnson & Johnson or Walmart or Amazon.com's governance. I mention them because I'm here to laud them. I know it sounds like I'm yelling at them, but actually I'm here to laud them because Johnson & Johnson, Walmart, and Amazon.com have now renounced their ties to ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. The group that is working hard to keep you from being able to cast your vote this year. Passing these photo ID restrictions in state after state. And now they're being called out for it. So all of a sudden, these corporations are scattering and running like roaches when you turn on the lights. Johnson & Johnson, Walmart, and Amazon.com have pulled their funding from Alec, which I think is a good thing. Alec is, hey, Desi Doyen. Desi Doyen, our producer, is here and my co-host on the Green News. We're going to play some Green News in a minute or two here.
Okay.
Unless I get into another rant. But Alec... The reason I mentioned you and Alec, because I confuse Alec with actually the who's the one who said that climate deniers, you know, climate change, people who believe in climate change are like Ted Kaczynski.
Heartland Institute.
Heartland Institute. Okay, they lost a whole bunch of funders as well, did they
not?
Yes,
they did, due to their crazy billboard campaign.
Comparing.
And all that other stuff that they do.
Yeah. What other stuff?
Oh, they compared people who believe the climate scientists and what they say. They compared them to serial murderer Ted Kaczynski.
Oh, yes.
And then, of course, they pulled the billboard campaign down before they had a chance to compare them to, you know, Charles Manson and all those
Charles
other guys.
Manson, right. Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, those
so
guys.
If you believe in science, you're just like Osama bin Laden.
Just
that makes
like
sense.
Him.
So they lost all their, not all of it, but they lost a lot of corporate funding, about $1 million or something. And just before they were holding a big conference out there in Chicago a couple weeks ago, the Heartland Institute. And who rode to their rescue? Who covered their costs out in Chicago for that conference? Do you remember?
I think it was Shell, wasn't it?
I think it was. I can't remember which of the fossil fuel companies, but they were happy to come in and say, yeah, we'll, you know, all those Microsoft stop funding you guys. We're happy to do it. We want you to continue fighting to change the curriculum in the school rooms to include climate denial, global warming denial in the curriculums. But I digress. Let me go back to Alec for a minute, and then I'll get to you, Desi. All right. So Alec, the guys who are fighting to keep you from... Tony, get this queued up. John Fund, my friend. The guys who are fighting to keep you from being able to cast your legal vote, Alec, they've lost still more funding from their friends at Walmart and Amazon and Johnson & Johnson. Good. Glad they're out. Who needs them? And by the way, thanks to colorofchange.org for keeping up the pressure on Alec. The founder of Alec, Paul Weyrich, had this to say in 1980, the Rosetta Stone of voter suppression for the Republican Party.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Our leverage in the election goes up as the voting populace goes down. That was Paul Weyrich in 1980, speaking to some 15,000 Baptist ministers down in Dallas at a conference along with Ronald Reagan and Jerry Falwell, the Rosetta Stone of voter suppression. And this is the year that we're seeing now in state after state, the voter suppression tactics going a full bloom across the country between the photo ID restrictions and then down in Florida, where Governor Rick Scott is not only purging people from the rolls, but Governor Rick Scott and the Republicans also had a bill that restricts voter registration down there. That bill, thankfully, or at least the voter restrictions, have now been tossed out by a district judge, but not before The Daily Show went down a couple of days ago and ran this piece and just destroyed Governor Rick Scott, destroyed his voter suppression. And my favorite, destroyed my good friend, the voter fraud fraudster and liar, the paid-for GOP shill, the shameless Republican scam artist by the name of John Fund, who wrote a book called Stealing Elections, in which he pretends that Democrats are stealing elections. There is no lie too big or too small for this jackass John Fund to tell in order to claim that Democrats are committing voter fraud and to keep them from voting. Well, when it came to this law down in Florida, The Daily Show had something to say. They interviewed John Fund about these restrictions that would require people to turn in their voter third parties to turn in their voter registration forms within 48 hours to the minute or they would be fined thousands and thousands of dollars. This forced the League of Women Voters of Florida to stop their voter registration campaign for the first time in 72 years because the restrictions were so onerous. They asked John Fund, the liar. Did I mention he was a liar and a shill?
I believe you did.
They asked John Fund about exactly this on The Daily Show the other night.
And because of this law, third-party registration groups like the League have left Florida, and new voter registrations are down almost 20%. But for pundits like John Fund, this is a necessary sacrifice to protect the sanctity of our electoral process.
It's a balance. We want to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. I think this will help in that effort.
So you want to increase voter turnout by passing this law, even though it decreases the amount of people registering to vote?
First of all, it doesn't have to.
It doesn't have to. It just does.
Well, the point is, I think any amount of voter fraud is too much.
Exactly. And sacrificing 20% of new voter participation is nothing compared to the horrors of voter fraud, which, according to the Brennan Center for Justice, happens at a terrifying rate of 0.0004%.
Any group that comes up with a number that specific is blowing smoke through their ass.
Right. You always want to be suspicious of specific numbers.
Look, the detected voter fraud that you prosecute and put people in jail for may be one number, but there's a lot of voter fraud out there you can never catch because it's so easy to do.
So voter fraud statistics are limited only as much as your imagination.
Oh, my God, is John Fund an idiot? So he wants to put these rules in place just in case people might do that, even though they haven't done it, even though there's no evidence that anybody's doing it. We have to risk suppressing the vote across the country. Thanks, John Fund. Did I mention that he was a liar and a shill and a GOP? And he works for the Wall Street Journal. Do you know that?
Of course he does.
He worked for it before Rupert Murdoch, before Fox News bought Wall Street Journal.
Right. He worked for it back when the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal was still completely ignoring everything in the actual content news pages of the Wall Street Journal.
It's really?
Yes.
So it's not just Rupert Murdoch that made the
it
Wall Street Journal suck?
It doesn't have to be just just Rupert Murdoch. They're willing to do it on their own, even without him.
All right. Well said.
He just put it on turbocharge.
Okay. Now, because I got off on this tear on John Fund, we got to take a break. Then we'll come back with the Green News Report and your calls, 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. And to you right-wingers out there, do not wait until the end. If you want to get in here and tell me how I'm a socialist commie pinko, you've got to do it now. If you wait until the end, you know, you won't be able to get out your full-throated hatred. So I look forward to hearing from you. 877-520-1150. This is Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Do stay with us. Green News straight ahead.
There ain't no need for ya. Go straight to hell, boy. I just need some place where I can lay my head. Hey, mister, can you tell me where a man might find a bed? He just grinned and shook my hand. No was all he said.
Psych.
Take a load off.
Psych. See, I said we were going to do the Green News Report. No, I was just kidding. We're going to do that after the bottom of the hour because I just nattered on so long that we didn't have time for it. Right, Des?
Yes, that is the correct
You don't have
thing.
To show me the phone number. We know what the phone number is. 877-520-1150.
Call now.
If you want to get... She says call in because... Call now because they always wait till the end. I don't get it.
I know.
Anyway, we got callers on the line. Let's do a couple of calls now. Get in line, 877-520-1150. Des, you can stick around for the calls, can't you? Margo's out there doing
yes,
the phones.
Yes, I can.
All right, you stick around, and then we'll do the Green News after the break, okay?
Okay,
here we go. Robert in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Thank you again. Great show.
Thank you, Robert.
I've got a question for you, and the question is mine, but it's derived from a quote from the 50s, which I think is so apropos now, it's unbelievable. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
The question is, why is barbarism parading around as American virtue?
Well, and it sure is, isn't it? Now, how is that a question from the 50s?
Well, no, the question is mine. It's derived from a quote in the 50s, and I'll tell you exactly. You remember when I tell you.
All right, well, be quick about it, because I'm going to run out of time again.
It comes from Dalton Trumbo's letter to the PTA.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
In 1950s, Dalton Trumbo was one of the Hollywood 10.
Yeah.
Blacklisted.
Yeah,
in the
right.
50s.
Right. And what? And he said, why is barbarism an American virtue?
No, the original quote in his letter is, barbarism parading as American virtue.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah.
Because his daughter was in junior high school, and because of his, you know, activities, she was just, you know, put through the torches of the dam.
Mm-hmm. And now this happens every damn day in this country. And, I mean, McCarthy would be running for president right now. I mean, I think that's that the right. Republicans are sad that they don't have McCarthy around to run. He would be the standard bearer for this party. I can't tell you how many times, and it's hysterical, by the way. Everyone on Twitter, I am the Brad Blog on Twitter. It's hysterical how many bright bots show up and call me a commie Marxist. It's hysterical. I love it. Please call me a communist on the Twitters, you bright bots. Love to hear from you. Robert, any other thoughts here before I go?
No, but, you know, it's just amazing to me how the majority of people in this country and around the world are just suffering from historical amnesia.
They are. Thanks, Robert, for helping us out and to put an end to that amnesia.
Thank you very much. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. Let's go to our friend Jeannie Dean. Hey, Jeannie Dean. How are you? And welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Thanks for calling in.
Breadline. Your
hey, Jeannie.
Oh, there we go.
Hi, Des.
That's
so
Des.
Good to hear you. You guys, first of all, great week of radio. Outstanding
all
use
right.
of our public airwaves. Thank you for that.
Nobody Your believes you.
No, I know. Well, that's all right. It's not the first time.
Okay.
Yeah. Your rant on Tuesday, Brad, it was epic. I want to get the whole thing tattooed on my face. It was really, really well done. And you so eloquently described the heartbreak and the rage surrounding an election, any election, but particularly the Wisconsin election, where we just can't know the results. It's infuriating.
It is infuriating, and I was infuriated. And if folks didn't hear it, it was not on purpose, that rant, but it was in the third hour on Tuesday. After we had spoken with Ion Sancho, the election director down in Leon County, Florida. Yeah.
One of my heroes.
Great election.
Love him.
Yeah. He was put in charge of the 2000 recount that never happened. And I was asking about, you know, about my concerns, the concerns that none of the votes, the ballots were actually verified in Wisconsin before the winners were suddenly announced, even though the exit polls said it was going to be tight all night between Walker
yeah.
and Barrett. And he said, no, Brad, you're absolutely right. And he said that on these these voting machines, we are playing with fire. And this
yeah.
is a guy who knows, who has been the election director down there for years. I wanted him to tell me I was crazy, and he didn't. And it was just so infuriating. And you're right, I kind of blew a vein that night. But you can check it out at bradblog.com if you go to Tuesday's
and
show.
And please do. Hearing you and hearing this should absolutely check that out. I'm going to post it wide as soon. I think you've highlighted the clip, so I'm going to go back and circulate that. Yeah, it's outstanding. And now here's where we differ. You like being told you're crazy so you can assuage your fears. I like being told I'm not crazy. Right, I like hearing real election analysis on my public airwaves in real time. It's almost like America.
You would say that, Jeannie Dean, but that's just because you're crazy. Thanks for the call. I got to go to a break. I love you, Jeannie. 877-520-1150. Brad on Malloy. Green News is coming up next.
When he remembered Zion, about the wicked, carry us away, captivity.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and
nice lullaby there, helping folks go to sleep on the East Coast there, Tony. Way to go. Yeah, it's light out. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Barely. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Our final half hour here, 877-520-1150. Brad of bradblog.com. Keeping you up all night long. Along with Desi Doyen, our producer, my co-host, and the managing director of the... managing director? Is that what it is?
I'll take it.
Managing editor.
Co-host of the Green News Report.
Of the Green News Report. Our latest Green News Report, fresh off the presses right now. And then when we come back, your calls at 877-520-1150. And Des, hang around. Don't start running out in the hall. You have to stick around.
Okay.
Okay.
It's Thursday, June 14, 2012.
Doesn't seem to me that they need $24 billion of our collective money as taxpayers when they'll make $1 trillion in profits over the next decade.
Big oil still fighting to keep its billion-dollar taxpayer subsidies. OPEC fights to raise oil prices. Americans for Prosperity fights back against extremist environmental kite-flying schoolchildren. Plus, remember this?
Gas prices, they are spiking. It will only get worse as we head towards summer.
$4 a gallon.
$5 a gallon.
$6 a gallon.
$7 a gallon.
$8 a gallon.
But you got to be tuned into the right channel to hear those forecasts.
Hey, Fox News, what do you say now that gas prices have fallen?
Yep, that's what we thought. All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We have been able to almost double our investment in clean energy.
Doubling down on green energy now, good campaign platform? Or does it sound a bit desperate? We report, and you can decide.
Wonder which one Fox News viewers will decide. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, before we get to the green news, some business here. We want to welcome aboard our newest affiliate, Mike Check Radio with Adam Hebert. You can listen to Adam on Saturday nights over at Ustream.tv. Glad to have you on board, Adam.
Yes, thanks, Adam.
Now, I read an amusing article this morning, Des, from climaterealityproject.org. The fossil fuel companies apparently are concerned that global warming and climate change is going to hurt their bottom line. For example, the Trans-Alaska pipeline is beginning to sink into the melting permafrost earlier than expected. All kinds of examples where the oil industry is now concerned about having to pay a price for what they are doing to the planet.
It's a really amazing, isn't it?
Does the irony never stop? What do you have for us today?
Well, we do have an oily report today, but first, Friday is Global Wind Day, and school children in New Jersey and around the world will be holding kite-flying rallies to celebrate wind energy as a source of clean energy. But don't worry, Americans for Prosperity is on it, and they are planning to protest the subversive, radical extremists' kids' attempt to poison America's pure, sweet relationship with oil. I am not kidding. The right-wing Tea Party front group Americans for Prosperity, who are bankrolled by the billionaire Koch brothers, are sending 6 buses of protesters to a kids' kite rally in New Jersey on Friday. They're, quote, going toe-to-toe with environmental extremists to combat their radical agenda.
Ha! That'll show those pesky kids.
It sure will. In more advanced wing nuttery, remember just a few months ago when Fox News and right-wingers were blasting President Obama for high gas prices and predicting they'd skyrocket by summer?
Just how high could those gas prices go? Try $5 a gallon for starters.
By the end of summer, maybe 6.
And maybe 7.
How does $8 a gallon sound?
Surprise, surprise. Gas prices have now fallen to around $3.60 nationally due to ongoing global economic weakness. But the right wing is now remarkably silent now that the price of gas has dropped.
Go figure. We should also point out that the all-time high for gas occurred under George W. Bush in July of 2008, something that Fox News keeps forgetting to report.
But gas prices may be headed back up soon. At the regularly scheduled meeting of OPEC over the next few days, they will be discussing the drop in oil profits. It's of great concern, and they will decide on whether they will cut back production to push those prices back up.
And that will be Barack Obama's fault as well if they do.
Big oil in the U.S. is fighting to keep its billions in taxpayer subsidies, although the rapid run-up in gas prices earlier this year pushed big oil's profits to near record highs. Oil industry representatives were very clear at a Senate Finance Committee hearing this week that they would simply cut drilling if they don't get their incentives. Here's oil man Harold Hamm of Continental Resources in response to a question from Senator Kent Conrad of North Dakota.
You've testified here that if that were taken away, in your company alone, you believe there would be a one-third reduction in drilling. Is that what your people have concluded?
It is. I'm not a tax accountant. You know, I'm an oil founder. But that in our company, it eliminates about 34-35% of our drilling activity.
Well, New Jersey Senator and Democrat Bob Menendez wasn't buying it.
Now, the reality is the marketplace has dictated that they will make more than enough money to continue to pursue their exploration, whether here or abroad. It doesn't seem to me that they need $24 billion of our collective money as taxpayers when they'll make $1 trillion in profits, not proceeds, over the next decade.
And it should be noted that Harold Hamm has donated millions to a Mitt Romney super PAC while also acting as an official Romney campaign energy advisor.
Since when did the music man go into the oil business?
Oh, no, that's oil man Harold Hamm, not music man Harold Hill.
He's just a bang beat, bell ringing, big paw, great go, neck or nothing, rip roaring every time a bullseye salesman. That's Professor Harold Hill. Harold Hill.
Oh, my mistake. Different guy, different industry, similar scam. For much more on that scam and all of the others that we didn't get to today in our Green News Report, please check out greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. We rely on you to help us keep telling the truth over your public airwaves. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, we got trouble. We're in terrible, terrible trouble. That game with the 15-numbered balls is a devil's tool.
Devil's tool!
Oh, yes, we got trouble, trouble, trouble.
Oh, yes, we got trouble. Everybody
make
trouble.
With a T.
With a
T. Gotta rhyme it with P.
Sing it.
And S stands for pool.
I love the Green News Report.
Oh, you love music,
the
man.
Last one we ended with Ozzy Osbourne. This one we end with the musical. You see?
There you go.
That's your Green News Report. Nice job, Des.
Now, before I forget, I just want to point out that Harold Hamm, who you heard testifying before that Senate Finance
Harold
Committee.
Hill, the music man?
No, not the music man. The oil man. Harold Hill. Harold, oh. Now you got me doing it. Harold Hamm.
Yeah.
He, not only is he an energy advisor to the Romney campaign, but he also gave millions to a Romney super PAC. And, of course, we do know that by law, super PACs are forbidden from coordinating with the campaigns. So my question is, did Harold Hamm coordinate with himself?
So he works on the campaign and he contributes to the super PAC,
right? But he doesn't talk to himself about it, not at all.
But he keeps it to himself.
Yes.
Somebody needs to do something about these campaign laws. I think
maybe you should talk about that and have somebody on.
You know what? I will. Tonight at the Brad Blog, I'm going to post 3 hours of archives from tonight's show in which we talked about exactly that. All right. Well done. Anything else before we go to the calls?
Just check out greennews.bradblog.com. There's a ton of really cool stories today that we did not have time to get to.
Okay.
Because
we had to play Harold.
I know. The Navy
the
invented
musical.
Solar panels that work underwater.
Really?
It's really cool. Find out at greennews.bradblog.com.
Wait, there's sun under the water?
No, they can get the sun's energy while underwater, which normally would be very difficult because of this. Okay, blah, 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 spectrum stuff, science-y things. Go to greennews.bradblog.com, scroll down to the bottom of today's post, and you'll see that link.
You and your science. You know, Ted Kaczynski loves science. Osama bin Laden loves science. Oh, by the way, Romney is calling for. I was talking to the Ron Paul guy last night, his advisor Doug Weed, about the fact that Paul wants to sell off our national parks to the highest bidder and so forth. Romney is calling for drilling and mining in the national parks. How do you feel about that, Des?
Calling for drilling and mining
yes,
in the national
is.
Parks. His energy plan allows for drilling and mining everywhere, including the national
well,
parks.
Well, that's exactly here
but
it is.
Not directly calling for it.
His campaign spokesman, Andrea Saul, said, quote, Governor Romney will permit drilling wherever it can be done safely, taking into account local concerns. That sounds like he's drilling in the national parks to me.
Well, not directly, but it is possible. No rules, baby.
You're
no
a Romney apologist, it seems to me. All right, let's go to the phones. 877-520-1150. Who do we got here? Let's go to Mike in Southeast Iowa. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Just out here in the land of pink slime.
Oh, come on. I love Iowa. It's beautiful out there because it's my home. I'm from Missouri, so it's, you know.
One of three states in the nation that's going to be serving pink slime to its school children.
It sounds delicious. What is wrong with you and you liberal? So they're saying, Iowa's saying we're going to serve the pink slime anyway?
Yep.
Well, they can get it even cheaper now, I'm guessing.
Well, I mean, we've got two governors, one Democrat, one Republican, that were in favor of it, one sitting at the Department of Agriculture and the other one sitting in the State House.
It sounds delicious. Did you call in to talk about pink slime, Mike?
No, I called in to talk about this little thing that there's a blogger goes by Keep 'Em Honest under Daily Kos, who had put up this little story about how the Republicans on January 20th, 2009, as the inauguration's going on, are holding a meeting to determine how to sabotage the U.S. economy to make Obama a one-term president.
Hmm. Well, I wouldn't be surprised. Well, I wouldn't be surprised. So we'll check it out. Keep him honest. Yeah. I mean, that has been the plan. They have crashed the economy. They have done every single thing they can to not help the economy, to
the
kill the jobs bill. Yeah, that's it. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate the call.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Enjoy the Iowa summer. Let's go to Kevin in Colorado Springs. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad here.
Hey,
how can I serve
evening.
You?
And it's not what I called to talk in about, but by the way, they're talking about fracking within the Colorado Springs city limits.
Wait, they're talking about wedding?
Fracking.
Oh, fracking. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, you can take your finger off the fracking, Tony. It's just fracking. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's great. Fracking, the more fracking, the better. Get your earthquake preparedness kits together out there in Colorado Springs. What did you call in to talk about, Kevin?
The Media Action Watch. Is that link MediaActionWatch.net?
MediaActionCenter.net. That's Sue Wilson's place. Yeah, check it out.
Thank you. I think that's one of the better ideas I've heard in a while is for every city to find people to go to these TV and radio stations and do that.
Yep, I do too.
Because it holds them accountable in one way or the other. It holds them accountable.
Remind them who owns our public airwaves.
Exactly.
All right. Anything else I can help you with? I got to get to a break shortly.
No, that'll cover it for tonight,
Thank
Brad.
You.
Great show.
Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it. And I love Colorado Springs. I hope to get back there and visit there soon. Let's go to we ought to get to a break. Then we'll come back. We'll take a couple last calls as we go into our final 5 minutes or so of this show, of this broadcast here for Mike Malloy. 877-520-1150 if you want to try and get in under the wire. This is the time that all the wingnuts usually call. Right? And I try to put them on, and I try to give them time. But, you know, I got 30 seconds for you people if you're going to wait this long. Don't blame me. 877-520-1150. We'll be back tomorrow, by the way, with a Bush-era whistleblower who I haven't interviewed in 7 years. We'll see if anybody else has joined him in blowing the whistle. You're listening to Brad Friedman on The Mike Malloy Show. Stay with us. My thanks tonight to engineer Tony Sorrentino. Yes, you folks on the West Coast who suddenly woke up at the bottom of the last hour after hearing that Ramones? This hour, that's right. Yeah, blame Tony. Thank you, Tony. And also my thanks to LA's K-Talk AM 1150. And my thanks to producer Desi Doyen. She's back. Oh, I forgot to ask how Young Turks went. I'll ask her tomorrow. And super-duper associate producer Margot Paez. Also, my thanks to the folks in the chat room. Not just the folks chatting and moderating like For Earth and Jeannie Dean, but also all of you fine Americans around the country participating in chats, tweeting me, sending me, calling me communist or whatever it is you people do. Thank you for tuning in. Of course, my thanks to Mike and Kathy Malloy as ever, and to my guests, Susan Sue Wilson and John Wellington Ennis. Any other business? No, that's it. Let's see how many calls we can get in here in the very few minutes we have left. Number 12 in Santa Fe. Hey, number 12, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. What's on your mind?
I would like to say that I can't stand both political parties. I hate Republicans and I hate Democrats, and I would vote for Democrats.
Yeah.
If Democrats would abandon the issue 100%, abandon the issue of gun control.
Right,
that is
I know.
That is
we don't have enough guns. I totally agree. We should totally have more guns, don't you think?
There we go.
Yeah,
there we go.
Totally. And by the way, Barack Obama, he wants to take your guns away. Did you hear that?
I didn't say that.
What's your problem with their what gun control? Obama expanded guns in this country.
Only because it was attached to a credit card bill.
He didn't do it for the right reasons? He doesn't love guns enough?
He did it because he didn't want to basically veto the bill. It was one of those amendments, just like both political parties. That's why I can't stand either political party.
I'm going
all the way back to Clinton.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible. I know, totally. The way the man is keeping us down and our guns. We don't have nearly enough guns around here. Thanks, number 12. I appreciate that call. Very thoughtful. Jay in Santa Monica, California. Here we go. Hey, homie. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. What's up, Jay?
Hey, that makes me laugh. By the way, there's a big difference between broadcasting and broadcasting. And we really appreciate the fact that you're out there doing what you're doing, Brad. And I'd like to see Ben Nelson and people like Blanche Lincoln and John Chester outed for being the real Republicans that they are and have them stop posing as Democrats.
You just did it, didn't you, Jay?
I hope so, because they really have been a pain in the tuchus for me. And I'm really happy that there's still a few people around, like my congressman, Henry Waxman. Yes, he does have his fault.
He's okay.
But he's all right. He's all right. But you're from and you're a movie producer, and you need to tell people to buy your movie.
Well, I'm not a movie producer at all, actually. But which movie are you talking about?
Was it Sex, Lies, and Murder?
Oh, yeah, Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies. You can go to votinglies.com. I don't produce it. I'm in it. It's a story that I reported for years and years, the Clint Curtis story. It's a hell of a good movie. It's an award-winning movie, but I don't make any money if you buy it. But I would love you to buy it and pass it around, because I agree it is awesome. Thanks, Jay, and thanks for the nice word about our broadcasting here.
Shoot them up.
Have a good one. All right, we have time for one more. Let's make it good. Oh, Joe in Indianapolis, welcome, sir, to the Mike Malloy Show.
How you doing? Since I don't have a lot of time, I'll just say this: big government demands big taxes. If you're not paying enough taxes, or you should be sending the government additional check and taxes because the government needs it. Barack Obama needs it more than you do. So if you want big government, pay big taxes. That's everyone, rich, poor, middle class.
So you're in favor of big government?
Oh, no, I'm totally against it.
So hang on a second, Joe. So you love Barack Obama, right?
No, I think he's an idiot. But if you want big
No, but hang on a second, Joe. But hang on, Joe. Joe, but spending growth under Barack Obama is the lowest it's been since Eisenhower. I would think you
that
would love him.
True.
It is true,
is not,
Joe.
No.
Look it up, my friend. Yeah.
No, you take 2009, uh-huh. If you put that all under Bush.
It includes Obama.
Includes $800 billion stimulus.
Right, and it's still lower.
Bush.
Okay, it's still lower than any president since Eisenhower. Go look it up. 1.4% growth. If you hate big government, Barack Obama is your man. You hear that, conservatives? I, on the other hand, I've got different ideas entirely. But, you know, you want small government? Go for Barack Obama. All right, we'll see you here tomorrow night right here on The Mike Malloy Show. I'm Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. Find me on the Twitters at TheBradBlog. Keep it lit, America. One more night. I'll see you then.